Warning, this podcast may contain adult content and is not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
Avengers Assemble!
Hello, this is We Talk to Ourselves, the only podcast on the internet where it takes the host three tries before he gets the name of the show right. My name is Eric, and I'm your host, and I'm here with, going around the table,
Eli,
Thomas,
Chris,
and Hunter.
Hunter is our special guest today. He is actually Eli's brother, and he's also working on development of a Pathfinder RPG campaign module, which we'll be talking about.
A campaign setting.
Campaign setting, sorry. That's a very important distinction for those of you who aren't familiar.
Sorry,
yeah. I had to do that. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on in the show, but for the first hour, we're going to be talking about a number of different subjects, including but not limited to Star Wars Rebels, the new animated series from Lucasfilm, Star Trek Into Darkness, what I call the For Real This Time edition review, which is where we're actually going to talk about the film instead of just pretending to. We're also going to talk about immortal celebrities, including but not limited to John Stamos and Keanu Reeves, and we'll also be speaking...
I object to talking about John Stamos. He knows what he did, and we're not allowed to talk about him until he apologizes.
Is this a Rebecca Romijn thing?
We don't...
We don't talk about that anymore!
Well, we're legally not allowed to.
Yeah. But and then we are also going to be speaking about Avengers Assemble, specifically the points of do we feel like the show is really worth watching. And we will get to that, but first we're going to talk about Star Wars Rebels. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with what Star Wars Rebels is...
Like me.
Yeah. Most of you know that Lucasfilm, and indeed the whole of the Star Wars franchise, was recently acquired by Disney for somewhere around $4.2 billion.
Didn't we decide that was about four Instagrams?
Yeah, that was about four Instagrams. I think Phil mathed out four Instagrams. By the way, for those of you who haven't noticed that Phil isn't here today, Phil is actually doing some work on his anniversary book for his comic, which is why he is not here today. But
some kind of, like, you know, real artist.
Yeah, I have to point out that, you know, Facebook buying Instagram for $1 billion was, you know, really... Hipsters don't use Facebook, so why is it? Were they just trying to give the hips trying to take something away from the hipsters? Because if they were,
hipsters, Hunter's word of the day.
How? I mean, well, think about it. Really, though, if you take Instagram away from the hipsters, how are they going to know what they're eating for lunch?
To be fair, I take as many things away from hipsters as I can, which is why you will not see anyone in the area with a wool hat.
I think you should be fair. I think you should be more fair. Why? Why do you feel that way? Because remember when it was cool to be ourselves because we were okay with the things we liked, and then hipsters tried to steal that from us.
No. Hipsters decided that they needed to look down on us with disdain because they were different. And it's like, no, you're just wrong.
But also, I don't need reasons to take things from people.
Yeah, I don't need.
Well, hipsters tend to be kind of scraggly and weak anyway, so it's kind of the rule of the jungle, I guess.
Well, that's why I take candy from babies.
Wait,
they can't really stop me.
Didn't you just give a reason about the wool hat?
No.
Oh, my bad.
I just like taking things from people.
But anyway.
I'm a criminal, Charlie.
Eli's going to kill me.
Before we got off on a tangent about hipsters, we were talking about Star Wars Rebels. Now,
sorry about that.
Yeah. Whatever, it happens. Star Wars Rebels is a new animated television show, sort of in the vein of the Clone Wars television show, which was originally put out by Lucasfilm, recently ended.
Do we know if it's going to be a CG project?
Well, that's kind of the thing, because they're bringing back a guy named Dave Filoni, and Dave Filoni was the original director of the Clone Wars series. He also worked on the Jenny Tartakovsky animated Clone Wars series from before Episode 2.
Well, they had a video on StarWars.com about Star Wars Rebels where they interviewed one of the main artists, the guys behind it. He said, the way it sounded, I think they're going to go CG again, because they're talking about, they were using the old art book, and they were talking about, think of how pretty this will look in CG and all that.
I genuinely don't know why for about half a second I was surprised that there was a StarWars.com. It's like, why hadn't I heard of this before?
There is a The Fan Film Network. Wait, it's TTFN. They have a whole, Lucas bought a whole thing dedicated to fan films.
Wow.
And they own it.
Yeah.
So.
One of the big things about the new series, though, is, like I said, Dave Filoni, who was the director of the Clone Wars CG series that was that was out.
And wonderful.
Yeah. They're bringing him back. My thought was, is Dave Filoni, because this is going to take place between episodes 3 and episodes 4. And the thing about episode 3 and episode 4 is the fact that, you know, it's all about the formation of the Rebel Alliance, which I'm still not exactly sure why they're calling it Star Wars Rebels, but the thing I have to think about is Dave Filoni.
Because they don't have a cause.
Well, see, I have a theory on that. If it is that in the expanded universe, the time between A New Hope and Revenge of the Sith is known as the Dark Times. And the thing is, like, Star Wars Rebels really, you have to understand is that the Galactic Empire is not just something that people just rolled over and accepted by any means, even in the beginning. So there were always going to be people that rebelled against it. The Rebel Alliance was just the first successful formal aggregation of rebel factions. It actually makes a lot of sense to me, because it seems like it's going to be something fairly episodic. Maybe it focuses on, like, the, you know, the people that, like, it was Bail Organa and the other important people that actually helped found the Rebel Alliance as we know it in the movies.
Yeah.
And I'd like to point out that Hunter just raised our expected vocabulary by, like, 5 points with those last 4 sentences.
Yes, but let's not forget that you're going to lower it when you continue to talk about skinning people.
Hey, I should only have to mention
No, that doesn't lower the vocabulary, it just lowers the class.
If we're all going to keep jumping around in here, I want to make space for one thing. You know, immediately what I remembered right now while I were having it? Eli took his keys off the table. Now, you guys can't see that, but he smiled and he nodded. The thing is, last week, I immediately I don't listen to the show before I edit it. I'm listening to the show live, and what was that noise that I was going on about?
The noise that you were going on about was Starburst wrappers.
I was going crazy.
I love Starburst.
They're pretty delicious.
As hot as it is in here, I almost hugged Eli when he took his keys off the table.
Well, anyway, back to Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah. Before we do that, all right, skinning people does not lower class. All right, I have a 3-piece suit that would like to disagree about that.
Okay, now Buffalo Bill, can we get back to...
Now we can talk about Star Wars Rebels.
Is that a dress?
So, basically,
my feelings
about it anyway is, and I think Hunter's right, I think they aren't going to be focusing exclusively on the Rebel Alliance because they, like you said, the people that just didn't roll over and accept the Galactic Empire as, you know, this is what it is now. So it's probably going to be more along the lines of individual rebellions coming together to form the Rebel Alliance. But my thought of it is one, what is the canonicity of it going to be? Are they going to include all of the expanded universe stuff like, for instance, the Force Unleashed games with Darth Vader's Secret Apprentice? Are they going to include any of the New Jedi Order stuff? Are they going to do any of the...
Well, here's my take on it. Obviously, I don't know enough about it as the rest of you guys. But my take on it is that they're going to introduce... Because there's very little actually established canon for that time, they can do pretty much what they did with the Clone Wars, both series and the comic series that was more aimed towards older audiences. And what they can do is they can actually just create new characters that maybe they just assign names to guys that you saw in the background in the movies but were never spoken to or talked about. And then they just make up backgrounds for them, and this is what they did during this time, and that's what their involvement is.
Well, really, we also have to keep in mind that Disney has said that they don't really want the extended universe stuff, which means it could be anything. Now, I trust Disney a lot because I love 90% of their movies, and I will be flipping through channels and be like, ah, man, I accidentally stopped on Disney, and there's some stupid teen show. And then 3 hours later, I'm like, why the hell am I still watching this? This is awful. But I do it.
Because Disney knows how to own souls.
Yeah, well, I had a deal with Mickey. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Don't worry about it.
I do think that whatever they do, it's going to be entertaining, but I greatly suspect that it's going to be something that we may have seen parts of before, but haven't really seen before.
Okay, because I eat, drink, and breathe Star Wars. So, let me just clarify.
Good one. It must be very difficult for you to...
It's not a recommended...
If only you would exercise Star
as much
Wars.
As... Yeah, it was always...
Wait a second. Weren't you the one getting on my case for grinding up comic books and injecting them into my veins?
There's a difference between Star Wars is delicious, and just, like, flat-out injecting them.
I'm trying to cut out the middleman, all right?
Okay. What Disney actually said was they weren't interested in reworking or taking the stuff from the expanded universe. Not that they were like, we don't care about that. Because they wanted to be true to the fandom and the canon, but they don't want to be roped into only doing these stories. They want to expand the stories that are there and then move on. Which brings me to the thing that Hunter said that's actually true that they do, even though they'll never admit this. They're like, who was that blue chick in the background? And they're like, oh, you like that blue chick? That blue chick was Saba Sabana Bautzibo. And she is a Jedi who is the blue chick? In disguise.
The blue chick was Dancing Boobs number 4.
Yeah, well, no, she has a name now and a backstory. We're going to do a whole comic line. No, she has a name.
She has a name. She's
fine.
No longer a property.
I've seen Boo far.
But which means bouncy boobs in some language.
To expand on your point, however, Disney knows where the money is. Yeah. And they know that even if it's terrible, Star Wars fans will go see it. Even if just so they can watch it and complain about it. But if they're smart, and they have been with pretty much everything else that they've done, aside from, you know, straight-to-DVD sequels, it has been that they tend, if they acquire something, they try to listen to the fans and give them what they want because that's how they can maximize their profit. And if I know anything about Star Wars fans, it's that anything past the Jedi Academy trilogy books is fair game to just be rewritten. A lot of it can be blamed on Lucas and the licensing rights, and I'm not going to bother going into the particulars, but the New Jedi Order, there was almost no communication between the authors about that. So a lot of the plot lines are spotty and there are a lot of holes. And I think a lot of the fans wouldn't be remiss if those were rewritten enough to make them a coherent story.
Just a point on your whole straight to DVD sequels. Cinderella 2 and Cinderella 3, in which she travels through time and possibly teams up with Bill and Ted, I'm not entirely sure. I don't remember very well, but they are wonderful, and you should shut your mouth. I'm a princess, Charlie. You can stop looking at me.
Okay.
Please don't sue us.
I will point out that the third Aladdin was at least watchable.
Oh, yeah.
I
liked it was third pretty Aladdin. Fun. It was pretty great. Oh,
I liked all the Aladdin.
Yeah, but Aladdin 4, Jafar gets glasses, I don't think was very good.
No. It was it dragged on,
yeah,
I admit.
The middle part was really slow.
And Aladdin Far, or Aladdin Far.
Aladdin Far. Well, that's crazy.
I really don't think that they Aladdin were trying near? on the any of the musical numbers past the opening. But anyway, back to Star Wars.
But wait, actually, I would like to say that Aladdin 5, Apu gets put down. Was really sad.
Oh, man. You know what? Why did he need a girlfriend? He's always had a boo.
I just want to say, Disney, please don't sue us.
Please don't sue us. We genuinely love you.
But also, you won't get anything. We're poor.
Yeah.
We don't even come up on your radar for money.
Well, back to Star Wars
yes,
Rebels.
Please.
One thing that has, at least gives me a small amount of hope, is Greg Weissman is working on it. Who worked as an executive producer on things like Young Justice, Spectacular Spider-Man, and the old Gargoyles anime.
Yeah.
Well, wow.
Which I loved all three of those animations, so with him on it, I at least have hope.
There's actually a part in a little bit of a special that I watched about Star Wars Rebels where Dave Filoni is sitting in his office and he's got his drawing easel up and he's drawing a TIE fighter. They're using Ralph McQuarrie's old concept art books, by the way, for the design.
That's what I was talking about when they were talking about.
Yeah.
Imagine this in CG.
Yeah. He's sitting there and like you said, Ralph Weisman comes into the office and he's looking over this easel and Dave Filoni like kind of looks at him. He goes, what are you looking at? He goes, nothing. Don't worry about it.
I think that's a different guy.
Was it a different guy?
Yeah.
Was one of the
art directors from the Clone Wars show.
Yeah. He's looking at the TIE fighter drawing. He's like, what are you looking at? He goes, nothing. It's okay. He goes, no. What were you looking at? Were you counting the struts? He goes, yeah, I was counting the struts. You're okay though. There's 8. And yeah.
And another one I saw, he mentioned the window panes.
Yeah.
I am an artist. However, unlike Phil, I don't make money off of it. Because Phil's better than I am. I have to say that is actually a thing that we pay really close attention to, is consistency throughout. And a lot of people, especially in the action stuff, you're not really going to notice. But I'll be watching action stuff, and I'll be like, oh, wait a second. Like, Fast and the Furious, I'll be like, that's not the same car. That's not the same. That's a different year.
You know, I have to say that on that note, I was flipping through articles on the internet and I on detail because
this is gonna see this conversation is gonna end in skinning people.
No, we talk about like noticing details. So, like I see this It was some stock photo that they, that the article was using as an example, and it just showed some woman, like, washing a car. But the problem is, you only see one quarter view of the car, and not even, like, the full front. It was, like, it cut off at, like, maybe a third down the headlamp, and you see, like, a little more than half of the windshield, and it's like, I knew exactly what that car was. You couldn't see anything more than a quarter of the hood and a bit of the windshield, and it's like, I know what that car is, and it's because I've worked on, like, 50 of them since ever.
It's kind of the same thing that I go through whenever I see stuff about computers on television. It drives me insane. Because I have a background in training in hardware and software troubleshooting, but I also have a background in networking.
You and every other nerd on the internet.
Well, yeah, but the thing is like, whenever I see hackers on television shows, it drives me crazy. It drives me mental. The worst one was NCIS? I think it was NCIS.
Wait till I'm back to the table for us to talk about.
All right, yeah, Chris went to go get a beer, but he's coming back. NCIS. There was an episode of NCIS where they're trying to catch somebody.
Let me give you a full backstory.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I actually watched that episode. So what happens is there's a hacker, and he's a crazy government hacker, and he's just hacking into government things and making them all not work right.
Because that's what crazy government hackers do.
Yeah, and so they're at their building in the computer lab, and all of a sudden the hacker tries to hack them, and they decide that they need to hack him back before he hacks them. So the computer tech girl starts typing furiously.
Her name is Abby.
Yeah, and then the other computer tech guy, McGee, decides he needs to help her. So instead of going to another computer, he has her slide over so that they both can type furiously on the same keyboard. Now, anybody who's ever typed ever should automatically know that that's not how those things work.
Well, that's bad. It's still not as bad as one episode of Bones where they had this one insane genius guy who evidently chiseled on the programming code for a malware virus that goes into their system when they scan the bones to do 3D projections, and it blows it up. But besides the rest of the stuff.
We're not talking about Bones, because I love that show, and I will
blaspheme.
If you're going to talk about Bones, then we have to just, and computers, we have to point out the fact that computer on Bones is not a computer. It is a magical MacGuffin from another universe that has decided to just come into ours and help people solve mysteries.
It's actually a lot better than it was in the beginning of the series.
They have gotten a lot better.
Because it blew up and they had to rebuild it.
Ironically, not my favorite DeShannel sister. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But now that we've gone off on a tangent,
no talent.
So I just want to say final thoughts on Star Wars Rebels. I personally think that it's going to be okay. I actually like the Clone Wars series, but I still like the Jenny Tartakovsky one better, but that's just nostalgia, I guess, speaking.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't know a lot about it. I haven't really paid attention to it, but my love for everything that he's ever done kind of makes me want to just go with that one, but I guess I'll hold out hope that it could be okay.
I mean, I think we all agree that Jenny Tartakovsky is a effing saint, so.
Yeah, I would.
I'm going to break the outline, but I really want to expand on this a little bit, because you know what brings this up and makes it such a great topic is, you know what I miss? There are no good sci-fi shows, like space sci-fi, epic opera dramas. Babylon 5, Star Trek's gone.
Battlestar Galactica's gone.
Battlestar Galactica's gone. And I was
Firefly's gone.
Super
and
Firefly.
Burst into tears because
super excited when I heard them announce they wanted to make the series. And I was like, they're gonna make a new Star Wars, and it's gonna, they're gonna animate it. And I didn't, it wasn't so much that I was upset they were animating it. I was, I thought I was gonna get a Star Wars series.
Now, on that point, I actually have very high hopes for it because, you know, like Tom pointed out, this executive producer has worked on pretty much all of my like, I love everything he's ever done. But, on that point, that you brought up, Charlie, I'd like to point out that Seth MacFarlane, who, whether you think he's funny or not, everything he touches turns to gold.
I think he's a genius.
Alright, he put out a music album, first one he'd ever done in his life, and it was a serious music album. Like, it was like this jazzy kind of thing.
Frank Sinatra kind.
Yeah. And he won 4 awards.
They're called Standards. I love that album. I own it. Have we had this conversation before?
We have not.
Oh, I feel like I'm having deja vu. I'm sorry.
But, apparently, he continues to write the Gene Roddenberry Society. He goes, "Dear Gene Roddenberry Society, please let me make a serious Star Trek show based on the canon you have created recently." And they reply with, "No. Stop sending us emails." So he replies with, "Dear Gene Roddenberry Society," like he desperately wants to make this show, and they won't let him.
Well,
and I wish they would.
He just really wants to do something different than Family Guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually, I've listened to some of the interviews. He would be one of my picks to actually be behind the creation of that, he really truly loves Star Trek. I mean, he knows what he is talking about. Back onto the sci-fi show. Yeah, speaking of Firefly, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but on April 1st, Netflix created, or did the most heinous thing that I've ever had done to me, including the other night, Eli. I mean, that was bad, but it was not Netflix bad. For April Fool's...
Challenge accepted.
Netflix put up Firefly new episodes.
Yeah, they put the new episodes
just to mess with everybody. So, of course, I log into Netflix, and I'm like, I wonder what... And I clicked on it furiously and then wept for hours once I realized that, no, there were no new episodes, and I should have known that. I hate you, Netflix. You're mean.
Aside from the fact they just said, no, there's no... We're not going to gain any new viewerships if we pick up that and make a web series out of it, like, and just set it 10 years after the Serenity movie, yet they did the same thing with Arrested Development. There's a big market for the sci-fi shows. I think that Star Wars Rebels is going to be awesome. I think that, though, the viewership is there. With Disney's money behind it, there is obviously the money to make it happen. A live-action Star Wars show of some form. I think, honestly, a Star Wars show that did not have Jedi in it, like, that showed, like, I don't know, followed bounty hunters or something. There are a lot of interesting characters that are not Jedi that I think people would really get into, and it would give people another aspect of the universe and help them, well, it would help as Disney make a lot of money.
I genuinely don't know how many plots you could actually create with this idea, because I just had it. But based on what you were saying, have a whole show about the smugglers of Star Wars during the
smugglers.
During the Empire, because apparently that was like a society
Rogue
all their
squadron,
own. Rogue Squadron. Yeah.
Keep going. I'm going on that note.
People want to give Han Solo a lot of shit about like, oh, I did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, and they were like, well, parsecs aren't a measurement of time. The point is that Kessel is surrounded by a nest of black holes. And the problem is actually charting a course through that nest of black holes in the shortest distance possible that still keeps you from getting sucked into one. He holds the record for the shortest distance, which is 12 parsecs. So.
I didn't know about that. I thought you were going to reference the fan theory that all Han Solo was doing was making something up to see how much he could screw these country rubes out of their money.
No, that's also one of the expanded universe things.
Ah, all right.
That's a Timothy Zahn thing, too, mm-hmm. I think. I think Timothy Zahn is like, no, I want to quantify that. The thing I want to go back to is space opera.
Right.
And Seth MacFarlane, I want to point it out, because there is one sci-fi opera left, which is Doctor Who, and that...
Oh, my God, I love Doctor Who.
And let me say, David Tennant was tired of being Doctor Who. He just wanted to move on.
Yeah, he wanted to do other things.
And he was like, okay, well, you know, we've got to find a new doctor. How are we going to do this? He's so huge now. And they gave that job to a fan who showed his dedication to the canon and belief. Seth MacFarlane is the Star Trek version of that fan.
I actually want to point out that Matt Smith, before getting the job as Doctor Who, had never seen an episode of Doctor Who in his life.
Yep. He wanted that job.
David Tennant wanted that job really bad. But Matt Smith, it was actually really funny because I watched him on the Graham Norton show when he first became a doctor.
I said that backwards, didn't I? I said Matt Smith was the fan, didn't I?
Yeah.
I might have. David Tennant was a huge fan, and they're like,
yeah, you're
run
talking
with
about
it.
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, and they're like, how are we going to do this? And David Tennant, like, we're going to give it to David Tennant, and he's like, I want this job. And he's like, I don't know. And he's like, you don't understand. I can be Doctor Who. And they're like, prove it. And he comes in and he convinced them. And by God, Matt Smith did the same thing later
according on. According to Matt Smith, one of the reasons the Doctor looks the way he does is because his agent called him. He'd only done like these bit parts. And his agent calls him up and goes, I got you an interview to play the Doctor as a Doctor Who. Dressed like an adult. Well, apparently Matt Smith's only adult clothes were loafers, slacks, a button-up shirt, a bow tie, and a tweed jacket.
Yep.
So he shows up in that, and they're just like... And he does great on the interview. Like, the whole audition, he does wonderfully. And then they're like, but that is such a weird way to dress for this day and age, that has to be the Doctor.
Well, one of the reasons it worked is it harkens back, I believe it was the fourth Doctor that wore a bow tie. He went from being super serious to this loose clothes, like, raggedy,
looking man.
I'm so excited we're having this conversation.
Okay, no, actually, we need to move on because we will spend the entire, we'll save Doctor Who for next time.
We'll do Doctor Who for next time.
Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek. Star Trek Into Darkness came out 2 weeks ago as we're recording this, and it is, I'm just going to warn you beforehand, and we're going to put a sound bite in here. This is going to be rife with spoilers. So if you don't want to hear any of this crap, like if you haven't seen it yet, we're going to tell you where to skip ahead. So Mr. Announcer is going to do that thing. But first thing we're going
to
talk about.
To be fair, if at this point you haven't seen the movie, or by the time this episode comes out and you haven't seen the movie, then you might as well just stop listening, go rent the DVD, and...
Hey there, Starfleet cadets. Mr. Announcer here. Just letting you know, if you want to avoid all the Star Trek Into Darkness spoilers, beam yourself over to 36 minutes and 47 seconds. But come back after you've seen the film, because there's some good jokes and some juicy tidbits in here.
I want to start this one so badly.
Go.
All right, so first and foremost, the studios lied to us, and it was wonderful. Khan is the villain. Oh, I mean, he's not, like, the main villain. Well, he is because he's Khan and he's always going to be the main villain, but he's there and it's beautiful. We get a lot. There are actually several editing issues, but they end up being awesome scenes, so I can let them go, and I think everybody really can.
I have to say that I have to add this now because I won't have much to add to the rest of this part of the conversation since I have not seen the movie, but I don't give a crap about spoilers, so... What I have to say is that after having watched the Sherlock BBC series, I have to say that Benedict Cumberbatch is the perfect choice for Khan. I mean, because he has just that sociopathic look that he can do. His voice is perfect. He's got the right height that they wouldn't have to do much more than just like kind of pad his clothes to give him an extra little bit of shoulder width. And he looks, he's perfect. I cannot. In this day and age, I cannot picture a better person that would fit the current new Star Wars canon.
Okay, this is a funny thing, because Chris and I are talking about this afterwards. So the night I went to go see it and they went to go see it, I got back from seeing it with my wife. I forgot Chris had this conversation with us, and I'm editing it, and the next day I see Chris, and I was like, oh my god. Do you know what's on the podcast? And he's like, yes, I know what I said. I loved every second of being wrong. It was beautiful.
If you'll go back to episode 1, I explain why he couldn't be Khan. Because they said no, and there were some things that didn't match up, and there's no way. Well, mainly it was because they said no.
Chris learned the hard way not to trust people on the internet.
Well, then I went into why
he throws in a line, and he said, at least I didn't say he was Picard.
That's true. I knew he wasn't Picard. So,
because he wasn't bald.
Well, no.
One of the things that
they
seriously change up. They seriously show the differences between this timeline and the previously established canon. And this is going to upset so many Star Trek nerds because comic books do this every few years, and it upsets comic book nerds. The canon doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't matter.
I would like to point out that I don't know if Eric will remember this, but when that trailer first came out, I think Kirk dies instead of Spock, because they show a tiny little clip where the hands are touching the glass.
Yeah, we talked about it. We had a conversation.
Yeah, and I was like, no, dude, he totally takes his place, because the hands are on the wrong side of the glass.
Is it just me, or does that clip remind anybody else of the scene in E.T., where E.T.'s like in the little like box thing, and Elliot's crying?
No, because I didn't give a crap about E.T.
Here's the thing. All right, anyone who's seen Wrath of Khan, and... Actually, if you haven't seen Wrath of Khan, your life is meaningless.
And I hope you're sad. Just all the time.
They don't know what to be sad about, and that's what's really sad for the rest of us.
That's true. Wrath of Khan is a beautiful movie. It really is. At the end of Wrath of Khan, Spock sacrifices himself to save the ship and dies of, like, hyper-accelerated radiation poisoning.
The summer story.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say something else.
Hyper-AIDS.
No, it sounded like you were going to say hyper-rape, and I was like, whoa.
That's what radiation does to you, but
Say that again? Say that whole phrase again
That's what radiation does to you. It hyper-rapes
you. That was the following word. Say it all together. Please say, that's what radiation does to you, but.
Oh. That's what radiation does to you, but. But anyway, Spock... You know, Kirk's like, why would you do that? And they're really sad. And they're separated by this glass to keep the radiation out. And Spock, you know, tells him the famous line, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And then Spock presses his hand in the live long and prosper thing right up against the glass. And Kirk does the same. And Spock goes, you are and always have been my friend. And they did that exact scene, but reversed. And there are going to be a lot of people that it bothers, and I understand why it would bother them. I love that, because to me it said that some things never change. You can change the timeline all you want, but Spock and Kirk will always be best friends.
I will say the one thing that did bother me is, and I understand in this day and age they don't want to take a gamble on it, and I really wish they had let Kirk remain dead.
That would have been interesting.
At the end of the movie. I think that would have really, like, honestly, if at the end of the movie, they would have just been like, nah, he's dead, I would have actually been sad.
I do have to say this. A lot of people are giving that scene crap because they're like, oh, it's a cheap knockoff of the Wrath of Khan scene. But what I don't think a lot of people know is that in the narrative of the film, it actually closes up a very important point. At the beginning of the film, Admiral Pike, at this point, tells Kirk that he's not willing to sacrifice himself for the good of his crew. He thinks that there's no win situations. And he, you know, one of the things they always said about Kirk's father, George Kirk, was he didn't believe in no win situations. That scene is James Kirk learning that, yeah, there are no win situations, but sometimes the only way to win is to lose.
Yeah. It also showed earlier in the film, there's a big thing where Spock and Kirk are arguing. And because Kirk breaks the Prime Directive to save Spock's life, and Spock turns him in for it. And Kirk goes, why would you do that? Or Spock goes, why would you do that? And Kirk goes, well, don't you understand? And that's what that scene was about, that Spock does understand. He did it because they're friends.
Well, to be fair, going back to the original movies, the one of the reasons why you obviously couldn't have Kirk be dead is, you know, it makes sense in the context of the following movies. The search for Spock and everything. The Vulcans, it's been established in the canon, they are a semi-telepathic race, and it was established in the old movies that what Spock did, Spock knew that he was probably going to have to sacrifice himself. He was smart enough, it has been established that he was smart enough to be able to think that far ahead. Yeah. So what he did was, and those of the people that have seen the movies already know this, and if you haven't, well then I'm going to spoil it for you because it's your own fault for not watching them before now, is that he went and planted, like, the core of his, basically a copy of the core of his consciousness in Bones' mind. And he did that as much, which it's funny, it actually shows the Spock's human half as much as anything, because it was a joke. Everyone who's familiar with the original series knows the rivalry between Spock and Bones. Mm-hmm. So that was, it was as much a joke for Spock to have done that to Bones as anything else. He also was able, he knew that with the, whatever, it was like the new Genesis thing that created life on the lifeless planet, whatever, he knew that Kirk would likely do the burial in space and just send Spock's body down there. Spock knew that would probably give them a new body, would at least grow a new body that they could find, and then they could just go and take the body and Bones to the Vulcan, blah, blah, blah. The point I was trying to get is that they couldn't very well do that with Kirk. You know, there isn't really a means for it. So they kind of had to go and do, you know, the injection of Khan's, you know, healing factor blood into the recently dead Kirk to bring him back. So it makes sense in the context, but it also means that they're not less likely to try and, like, draw on other movies or as strongly on other movies. So that way they can continue to establish a new canon.
I'm sorry, okay, there's two things now. You know, just because I want to play off of something you said. The reason they couldn't do it that way in the first movie is because that line would have taken too long to deliver, and then it would have played out like this. Spock, you have now and have always been my friend. And then he'd be like, shouldn't have the radiation have killed you already? Me and Summer went to go see the movie, and then I see Chris, the first person I actually see with Summer, and I just tell Chris, because I know Summer's going to tell him, that I started crying during the movie, at which point she's like, and I called it, I'm like, Khan's blood heals people. I felt like suddenly I was just in the worst horrible sitcom ever, because they begin making fun of me. They're like, how did you not know that was coming? I was like, I don't know. He was dead. JJ was gone and Kirk died. It was the end of a series. It was all over. And they're like, you are such a girl. I walk all the way in. I see John. Summer is at the counter telling John this story. John walks over and sits down. He's like, you were such a girl. I was weeping. I was
openly sobbing.
And, like, the funny part of that is I really like Star Trek. Like, Eric, we've got, like, I will defend Star Trek. I pick Star Trek over anything. And I'm sure the internet's going to implode and send me all sorts of hate mail. Star Trek's better than Star Wars. Deal with it.
Well, you'll have
Yeah, I'll totally.
Oh, my.
But, like,
we don't know him.
I saw the end of the movie and I was like, oh, okay. But I wasn't once like, oh, wow, I might actually tear up. I was just like, yeah, no, I mean, he's clearly not going
to
kill him.
They tried to make me feel, but I wouldn't do it.
I did feel, I didn't cry, but I did feel because, again, like Charlie said, I mean, we knew what was going on. But I don't think there's anything wrong with crying at movies because I watched Lilo and Stitch on television the other day. And I'm like, yeah, this is a really fun movie. This movie. And I get there about half an hour into the movie, maybe 40 minutes. And it's at the part where it gets really sad. And I'm crying watching this movie. And I'm like, why did I punish myself like this?
Yeah.
Why did I think this would be a happy decision?
I just finished reading the Wheel of Time series. And I'm
You don't say anything about
it. I'm not gonna name names. I'm not gonna tell Chris is covered ears. Look, the point is, throughout the series, he has killed off like little minor characters that I really liked. I was like, I didn't think. No, it's when like a horse dies that I find myself tearing up. And I'm like, what is wrong with me?
Much like me, you value animal lives over human lives.
Because people suck.
I haven't read the last one yet.
On book 8.
I haven't. Just haven't read it.
But it's your own fault.
What was like? What I was gonna say is like, so there, like, I didn't feel sad at Star Trek, but for some reason, animated movies always get me. Iron Giant?
Oh,
man,
my God.
When I saw the end of that, and I was like 14, I was destroyed. I remember sitting on the couch because I had stayed at home sick and just weeping, and I was so upset. Right. I was
the
like, why would you do this to me?
Oh, my God!
Oh, let's talk about the fact that apparently at one point Pixar said, yeah, hey, guys, let's stop waiting until the end. Let's make them sad right at the beginning of the movie. You should know what I'm talking about. Up. The first 10 minutes of that movie, you're like, hey, your feelings? You got them? You hold them? Good. Watch what happens when we do to them. And they just crushed them.
I actually kind of want to save this conversation for
we'll do this next time, too. We'll talk about sadness from movies.
I would not be able to go home and have me hear this podcast unless I tell you this story right now.
Fair enough.
That was the date movie. I asked Summer to marry me the next day. That is our movie. She said I better float a house for her, or else.
Wow.
You explain, like, physics. So
I told her, I was like, you can wish that. You're obviously going to outlive me, so you float a house.
And she's going to float a house all the way to, like, wherever it is
we'll
you want a fictional place you want to go.
So,
y'all are going to be at my house floating on.
Are we going to talk about the Star Wars versus Star Trek now?
Yes.
Yes, Chris brought it up.
Oh, are we getting into that?
Can I start?
Yeah,
go for it.
Okay, well, here's...
I know how you get when you're all like, I hate this.
No, see, here's the thing. I grew up on both. Is it my parents had all of the Star Wars movies on VHS, and my dad raised me watching old reruns of both the original series and Next Generation. And here's the difference. Is that Star Wars is a space fantasy. It is pretty much just... It is basically magic in space, whereas Star Trek is legitimate science fiction that is based off of scientific theory and what we think could possibly happen.
I officially tap out of this conversation.
Okay. See, here's my point. I like Star Wars. I watched the original three movies. Actually, my uncle took me to go see... You remember when they remastered them and they didn't add in a bunch of digital effects?
Oh, God, yes.
I went and saw them so long ago that the movie theater was still in Patrick Henry Mall.
Wow.
That's how long ago he took me to see them.
I went to go see Twister in that mall.
Nice. And like, I remember watching those movies, and I had never seen them before. And I was like, wow. So I really like them. But I grew up watching Star Trek. Next Generation, that was it for me. I watched every single episode of Next Generation.
Picard.
More times than I get. Worf, I mean, come on. He's the baddest dude there is. But my argument...
I have to say that it was kind of good for Tasha Yar to die, because Worf needed to shine.
Yeah. My argument for Star Trek being better than Star Wars is Star Wars has, like, I don't know, the thing that always bothered me about it is it was kind of like you see the Rebel Alliance and they do these things and it's like, oh, we defeated the Empire. Whereas, like... Okay. But anyway, what I was saying is my thing with Star Wars is, like, they blow up the Death Star.
It's
and it's like...
Dark.
It's like, oh, it's we've done it. It's over. But, I mean, the Empire is a galaxy-spanning government. Like, blowing up a base doesn't end that. It's just like, okay, well, you blew up a base. We still have thousands of ships and more resources than you could ever hope to touch. You just pissed us off. Star Trek took galactic conflict as a serious, like, look, I mean, there are economic factors, and you clearly can't. I mean, just, it, I can't do it.
Alright, like Hunter was saying, our dad raised us to believe, first off, Han shot first. Alright?
Hell, yes, fistball.
Yeah. That is the most important fact of life. Han shot first, because Han is not a hero.
I tapped out of this conversation, keep going.
Alright. And I actually was maybe 14 before I'd ever seen one of the original Star Trek episodes. Now, before I was 14, I had seen all the Star Trek movies except for the first one at least 5 times because we owned all of them.
I can't help it. I gotta say something about that. Right. Just because he shot first doesn't mean he's not a hero. That dude was there to kill him. Fuck Greedo. I'm done. I gotta bleep that later.
No. I agree. I agree with you on that. But the point of that scene was to show that Han is not a good guy.
It's to show that he is not the stereotypical hero. He's a realist. He understands how these things work. Greedo's an asshole. Yeah. Greedo's probably gonna shoot him. Why would he wait?
What I was saying is that I loved Star Trek Next Generation. Alright? I loved Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine, I loved it because it showed, yeah, this whole, like, you know, utopia doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, there's no, the replicator technology means that there is no, like, physical need for the poor people. That doesn't mean the poor people don't still exist, because the replicator technology just turns it from a capitalist society into a meritocracy. So if you're not actually producing something that is beneficial to society, if you're just, like, an average menial worker, then you don't get any sort of special accommodations from everyone else. Whereas, like, Starfleet, like, yeah, you're serving to defend the society, you're doing scientific work, et cetera, et cetera.
By the way, if somebody wants to send us an email and tell us what that little girl was dying of in the beginning of Star Trek Into Darkness, I would love to know.
Super yeah. Cancer.
Because that had to have been, like, super bonitis.
I think it was super
lung
AIDS.
Cancer, AIDS, to the max. Or shades.
I'm going to back up just a little bit. To be fair, and I think even Chris will agree with this, the first Star Trek movie is something that we just don't talk about.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember that.
Exactly.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't remember it.
The cast agrees with you.
But anyway, the little girl dying or something in the beginning of Into Darkness, which I still haven't seen, but I'll get around to it eventually.
Damn straight.
It makes sense to me because it's still in the timeline of the original 21st century, or original series. Original 21st century.
We're living in a copy. This is not the original 21st century. It ended last year.
Anyway.
Around December.
This is actually ended in 2000.
Ultimate 21st century.
The point is.
We're all grittier.
The point is that the new movies are set in the 2200s, the 23rd century. The Next Generation actually, that was occurring in the 24th century, actually at the very end of the 24th yeah. century. The original series was at the beginning of the 23rd. So there's almost 200 years of difference in between those two series. Even in the Next Generation, there were still diseases that their medicine couldn't treat. So it makes sense that there would still be some diseases that they couldn't quite figure out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to say that maybe even the Star Trek nerds amongst you don't know is there were plans in the early 2000s for another Star Trek live-action television show, and it was going to be set in the year 3170.
Whoa.
Yeah, and basically Starfleet was starting to fall apart.
Instead of Data, you have a Borg.
Well, basically,
actually, they touched on that in the Next Generation.
Yeah, basically what was happening was that Starfleet was starting to fall apart. Romulus and Vulcan had allied with each other and had basically started building this, you know, big utopian society thing. A whole bunch of planets, the Klingons, the Ferengi, I think there were a bunch of other ones too. Can't remember all of them. Had pulled apart and made this basically war band that were going around conquering huge systems of planets. Mm-hmm. And Starfleet was basically this weak, ineffectual government that was kind of masquerading and pretending to be a force in the universe.
Huh.
For a moment, I'd like to touch on, you know, what we started with. which was about how Star Trek versus Star Wars. And I do think Hunter is right that at the end of the day, you can't compare them but so much because they are kind of a different beasts. I love Star Wars because it's this like dynamic pulp kind of thing. But I love Star Trek because it has this official, I could almost believe that this is the future type of thing.
Law and Order and Monk are not the same kind of detective shows. That's right. What it's kind of like.
Apparently. Yeah.
All right. I'll admit that. I still like Star Trek better. What I would like to point out is that
I do too.
Any of you listening, notice there's a Star Trek we didn't mention. Yeah, I'm talking about you, Voyager.
All right, come on. To be fair, Janeway is bitching.
She can be bitching all you want. It's still a terrible.
Oh, I would like to say my second point was that, you know, earlier Hunter and Chris made a comment about Picard, and I love Picard, but Patrick Stewart can do anything, and I will like he can just walk around punching babies, and I'll be I'm going to pay $40 for that DVD.
I watched him on the Graham Norton show, and it was amazing.
But Patrick Stewart, but Picard, I feel like
was asleep. It's called acting.
Yeah, Hunter and I have had this conversation before in that. If you could trade places, make them trade places, Kirk would be perfect as the captain for Next Generation because that Enterprise was a warship. Its purpose was to patrol the borders and just murder anything that wanted to cross it that wasn't supposed to. It's not exact, but it's not the same thing as Kirk's ship, which was supposed to, you know...
Scientific vessel?
Yeah, exactly, which Kirk mostly used to punch and bone anything around, but... I gotta say, if it were possible, I would
order?
Punch and bone. And
you gotta make sure they're unconscious first. you don't wanna try to invade a conscious cloaca. That's a bad idea.
But anyway.
That's gonna be this episode's title, by the way. A conscious cloaca.
Works for me.
I think it should be called Punch and Bone. But I genuinely would love to see Riker and Kirk go on a night on the town. I think that would just be the best thing ever.
This is something that I've learned to appreciate having been in the military. You know, obviously, you know, Starfleet really is modeled more off of like modern navies, especially in the rank structure. But I mean, it has to be. It is a ship. There are analogs that have to be. But still, even in the Army, there is. Star Wars is obviously, it's almost like a D&D group, because you've got the ragtag bunch of adventurers. Yes, they have a common goal, but other than whatever discipline they gain from just eventually working together as a group, they're not a cohesive unit. Whereas Star Trek is very much so as much a military show as anything else, because they all have rank, they all have a specific purpose, and all of them have, you know, jobs and specific duties. There is a set schedule for everything. Everyone knows what to do in an emergency, which, unless, you know, they get hit and the panels explode, which, you know, you would think that would be a safety feature that they would put into those ships.
Yeah, but, you know, I always wanted to know about that. Like, whenever they got shot, their panels exploded, and I'm not an expert in science. That's because their
panels are full of reactive armor.
This is the same reason that when stormtrooper armor designed to stop blaster bolts kills them
actually,
when they're hit with a spear.
Actually, the stormtrooper armor from the original trilogy wasn't designed to stop blaster bolts. It's designed to stop slug throwers, and it was designed to stop impact weapons. You can't stop a blaster bolt unless you have an energy shield.
They were killed by spears, stone spears.
Impact weapons, not bladed weapons.
That's not a blade.
Not
that's a pointing
or
rock.
Slashing.
Well, it's still actually there's only one. If you've got
what you're telling me is that their armor was made out of cardboard.
Well, it was made out of plasteel, but the problem is plasteel can't stop energy weapons, and it can't stop. It's like wearing plate mail.
Okay.
It is basically a future version of Kevlar. Kevlar will stop bullets. Kevlar will actually protect you from a certain amount of shrapnel. But a guy that actually runs up to you with a combat knife and shanks you,
boat.
It will not stop it.
Also, they shoot you with a laser.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that always bothered me about Star Wars, I always felt, and we talked about this last podcast, but since Hunter's here, I want to bring it up again, see how he feels. I mentioned that it really bothered me that, you know, you had the first one which set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really felt for Luke. And then you had the second one, you were like, wow, I don't know what they're going to do with. And then the third one was like, teddy bears! How they lost, was teddy bears!
Well,
really? They have Star Destroyers! I've seen them!
However,
they're crazy!
Throw a compressor on that portion.
Well, here's what I have to say about this. I am a writer. And basically what you have is that the way the trilogy worked, the original Star Wars trilogy, is that the first, A New Hope, was the build-up.
Yeah.
Pretty much, like, the entire second half of Empire, and to a certain extent, a decent chunk of Jedi, was the climax. Yeah. That was the, and basically everything else was just kind of like, I forget what the actual literary term is, but it's pretty much, like, all the stuff with the Ewoks, that's pretty much just the downhill roll from the climax.
It's the wrap-up.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, yeah, it's more to make you feel good. It's like, it's there to just kind of like, just kind of deal with the excess. You've got all this catharsis going on, so you need, like, the excess. They need something to do with the excess emotion. So they chose to give you the stuff to...
They chose to give us teddy bears.
Yeah, well...
I mean, let's not call them anything else. They're teddy bears.
Who went extinct because all of the wreckage of the Death Star fell into their atmosphere.
I would pay good money to have an hour and a half climax.
Giggity.
To the show.
Right, moving on.
No, I want to talk about the... Wait.
Are we going to talk about what I just said? Because that's a bad plan.
No, he's ignoring what you said.
It's a fun fact. I'm sure every Star Wars nerd in the universe knows it for the same reason I do. It's just a funny fact. Because I grew up in that era is probably why it's more relevant to me. But what did Warwick Davis play in the Star Wars movies? This is a really long question, but there's a reason I'm doing it.
Ewok.
Yeah, Wicket the Ewok.
How do you know what Wicket was a what?
An Ewok.
How do you know that?
Because that's what they said.
Who said?
No, they actually never said.
That's true.
The word Ewok is never used in the movie.
The word Ewok didn't come about till they made those extra movies where you had, like, the kids get crashed on the planet.
We don't talk about those. That is exactly in the same era.
Hey. Talk about them. I enjoyed them. Screw
hey,
you.
Hey, Boba Fett came from the Star Wars Christmas special, so, I mean, let's be real here.
The first time the Ewok was used for production, the word was... Before the movie was released, the toy line was released previous to the movie coming out.
I will submit to that I'm only 24, so as far as I've ever known, they've always been Ewoks.
Yeah,
I wasn't alive when they weren't Ewoks.
Yeah, at 29, still. It's...
No, they were Ewoks when you went to go see it. Not because they said they were Ewoks in the movie, because you bought a bunch of toys, or someone bought some toys and was like, look at these new Ewoks I got. I know, because it said Ewoks on the box.
Actually, our dad just told, well, and our mom. And actually, like, occasionally, to give you an idea of why Hunter and I are the way we are, occasionally our family dinners would break down into a nerd discussion about Star Trek or Star Wars or
Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah. My God, Lord of the Rings.
We're not getting into that.
No. We're not stepping into Eric's domain. We don't have time to get into Lord of the Rings.
That will be my next session on here, and that will be the entire 2 hours. But anyway,
I will tag out of that because I'm not stepping into Eric's domain.
But yeah, we're actually approaching the hour mark. We can keep going for a little while longer if you want to actually discuss immortal celebrity.
Shut up! It's my turn.
You want to keep it down? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break then, and we'll be back here shortly on We Talk to Ourselves.
Hello out there in podcast land. Mr. Announcer here. Today's intermission music is by Alexander Navarro. It's called 1 Minute for the Sun, off of the album of the same name, 1 Minute for the Sun. Hope you enjoy.